Well, good morning. How is everybody? Woo! Somebody's awake. Well, it is a great honor to be here with you guys this morning. It's just always such a blessing to be able to come down here and visit some friends and meet some new ones. So excited to be here. God's kind of laid something a little different on my heart, so I've kind of been just kind of working this over and working through this. But, you know, typically when you travel, you bring more of what you'd call a sermon, which is more something that's energetic and something that's, hey, let's make a move and let's grow closer to God. And then as you start pastoring, as you start settling in, you do teachings and things like that, or you come in to do a seminar. And so what's going on here is about 8 years ago, God laid some things on my heart about marriage. I began to look at some statistical data about percentages of marriages, and at that time, the percentage was that 52% of Americans had had a divorce. And what really made that weird was, is that it was actually 53% of the church had been divorced and 51% of the world had been divorced, which averaged into about 52%. And that blew my mind to be a pastor and to be able to look at that there was no difference. In fact, a percentage higher of divorce rate in the church than there was out of the church. And there's never been a study done to see who got divorced before salvation, before church. So those statistics, you know, like any statistic, can be twisted a little bit. But still what began to stick in my head was the fact that as a church, as Christians, we weren't doing enough to culture our marriages. And so when the world looks at us as a place of what they need to do for marriage, the church doesn't really become a statistic that they look at to make their marriage successful. Because we're no more successful than they are. And so we don't do enough things to teach about biblical principles. You know, churches offer some counseling. Sometimes they have some little premarital groups. But very few churches invest a lot of time and energy into the relationship of a husband and a wife. They spend a lot about relationships with God and all of those things. So I began to look at that about 8 years ago and began to actually work up and write a book. And right now it's kind of in manuscript form. And I've always promised the Lord I'm going to finish it. And I'm the king of procrastination on that because there's a lot of things that I'm better at than writing. And because writing is definitely not going to be my strong suit. But the idea of it was, and kind of the title that I was always looking at was, Honey, Let's Unpack Our Bags and Go Back on the Honeymoon. And the reality is because what happens in our relationships, where does the love go? I mean, what happens? Do you remember the dating stages? I mean, you know, I always hear people talk about how awkward the dating thing is now and meeting online and doing all this. And I really don't know about that at all as far as internet dating. I got married before the internet, but before the internet was very popular for sure. But the thing was is that when you're dating, do you remember those times when you would go out and you knew you had to work the next day, but it's 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning and you're still saying, oh, I need to go home? But you don't, right? And now, I mean, let's be honest, in my relationship, I'm like, honey, it's 9 o'clock, I got to work in the morning. You know, what happened there, right? You remember the phone calls, and these are things, no, you hang up first. No, you hang up first. No, you spend 4 hours discussing who's going to hang up first. And then when they do hang up, you call them right back, and you go, hey, you hung up on me. The thing is that you think about those things when we're dating. I always think about the fact that used to, you know, when we were dating, my wife would ride in the middle of the truck seat, right beside me, right there. It couldn't have been that comfortable, right? But she was so in love with me, she couldn't help herself. You know, and now I say, you know, hey, baby, I got this seat right here. And she goes, I'm pretty comfortable right where I'm at, right? Because things have begun to morph and to change. And that's the thing we talk about. And you, all those things are little things, but whether we believe it or not, they all began to add up to this function of the romance begins to leave. And not long after the romance begins to leave, the love just starts to split. You know, as we talk about the word love, and there's five major words, and some of this I'm going to have to delete out for things of time, because normally this is something that I teach over about an eight-week period or in like a weekend seminar. So I'm trying to condense it. But, you know, when we talk about Greek, Hebrew and Aramaic and those things, there's five different major words that mean love. But in the American language, there's only one. So when we talk about love for our spouse, when we say, you know, I love you, and I tell Scott all the time, I say, I love you. But I hate to tell you this, I don't love you the same way I love her. And I'm sure you're glad of that, right? You know, the thing is that's the distinguishing. And so what I tell people is, in the American culture, we have cheapened the word love because I love French fries, right? I mean, that's the thing. So the same word I use to say, well, I love those French fries, is the same word I use to say, baby, I love you. Now, how does that cheapen that experience? And so the reality is, though, is that this romantic love, this agape love, this love that we share for one another can be cheapened in through our experiences. And just this past week, I was in this meeting. I'm still doing some safety consulting on the side, and I'm in this big audit. And the first thing the auditor asked this company that I'm working for, he said, what is your mission statement for the year? And this is a small company of about 18 employees. He didn't even know what a mission statement for safety even was. And the guy said, well, you know, example of that would be, you know, target zero, right? I mean, I'm sure every company used that for at least 12 years, I think. You know, target zero, which meant we're going to target zero accidents. I mean, have you ever thought about the thing when we look at that and we go, you know, what if we just said, you know what, I think target 10 is fair. You know, 10 fatalities, that's all right, isn't it? But yeah, why not? You know, but the thing that we look at and the thing that we get into with this is with marriage, it's almost like we've become that there's a targeted percentage of marriages that it's okay if they fail. You see, if I told you target 12 or target 10 or whatever in safety, you go, no, that's not right. I mean, no deaths acceptable, no injuries acceptable, nothing. But all of a sudden, even in church circles, when I began to talk about marriage, I said, well, you know, what is your statement? What is, as a pastor, as a leader in your church, in your own life, what is an acceptable amount of divorce? And they'll always give you a number. You see, we've got to change our mentality to understand that target zero has to be our idea of what marriage looks like. You know, no divorce is acceptable. Now, there's fatalities at work, right? But they're never acceptable. They're dug into, they're looked at, we retrain, we redo, everything happens. We go, we're not going to let that happen again. How long has it been since we dissected that into what caused a divorce? We just write it down as an acceptable number. It just happened. Now, I have dug into it some, and again, I can't go into every little thing, but a lot of times we find out that some of the major problems in marriages were not dealt with ahead of time, okay? Now, today I'm not going to be able to go into all of that and iron those situations out and talk about premarital things and what it looks like to be in love before marriage and those kind of things. But all I want to say is that today as a church, we're going to look at this thing from the aspect of zero has to be the policy. That doesn't mean if you've had a divorce, that doesn't mean if you're struggling and all those things, that we love you any less. But it means that we need to use your situation, we need to learn from your situation and ensure that it doesn't happen again. The other statistic that I looked at here a while back was, once a person has had one divorce, they're 80% more likely to get a second one. Which means what? We're not learning from our mistakes very well, are we? And the reason for that is I believe that we have decided that relationships are disposable. Relationships are disposable in society today. They're so overrun. It's just, you know what? This just ain't working out. I'm not happy. There's somebody out there that'll make me happy. And we're going to start to break that down and to look at that, and that's kind of where we're going to concentrate today. I want to read to you from Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5. And if you will stand with me as you read from God's Word this morning. And I'll be reading from the New Living Translation, Ephesians 5, verse 31 through 33. As the Scriptures say, a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are united into one. This is a great mystery, but it's an illustration of the way Christ and the church are one. So, again, I say, each man must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. God, we just come to you, honor you, and praise you. God, thank you for the reading of your word. God, I pray that the hearts of your people this morning would feel a conviction, an understanding of your word, an understanding of your love. God, would you just help us now to devour and to appreciate what it is that you say to us through your word. Again now, God, just join with us and show us your path for happy marriages, God. And it's that we pray in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, first thing I want to say is, because I have taught this several times, and one of the big things they come up to me, and people will come up to me afterwards, and they'll begin to talk to me, and they'll say, you know, Pastor, I tried everything that I could to save my marriage, but the other partner just wasn't willing to hear it, okay? So understand that I am in completely understand that marriage is a contract or a covenant. And anytime you look at a contract or a covenant, it's dependent on both sides of the contract or covenant to keep their part, okay? In all of this we're going to look at, there's this situation where at some point both partners have to be willing to work this thing out. So understand, I'm not telling you that divorce is never come to the place where it's inevitable and it's going to happen. But what I am telling you is that I believe as a church that divorce has to be an unacceptable practice to us, that we do everything in our power to avoid, as much as the company you work for tries to avoid fatalities and put that kind of effort and that kind of energy into this thing. So when we're looking at this, and I read this scripture to you because that's one of the greatest things that we talk about. It says a man leaves his father and mother and is joined to his wife, and the two are joined into one. Now, you know, in wedding ceremonies, that used to be always the unity candle, and then as times have progressed, now I've done unity sand, I've done unity rope. I don't know. There's probably other ones that I just can't even remember, and there's probably some you've done. But I always think about the sand. Because they start pouring the sand in there, and you know, they're mixing it, and it's all becoming one. And I go, great, now I'd like you to pour that back out and put your sand over here and his sand over here. You think they could do that? If they did, it would take a while. And I got a feeling it still wouldn't be all-inclusive. You see, that's a symbolization, and it talks here, same scripture, about how that's an example of how Christ and the church go together. Because if you take Christ out of church, there's no church. Now it's a gathering of people. Okay? Same thing begins to take place. When we separate ourselves, we are never whole again. We're never the same. We're never whole. We become broken merchandise that's just trying to deal with ourselves. And so my goal, my heart, my passion has always been able to try to work out and figure out what can we do to reach target zero in divorces. Now, the biggest thing that I had to do in my life, and it helps me, is because I'm a very black and white, analytical, everything's got to have a step and a process, right? And so I created a list of things in my life of the order of importance I have to put them in and how that works. And now understand it, and I call this my 7 steps to success in a successful relationship. And the number one thing is, how do I order important things in my life? And so I spent several years reading through the Bible, trying to understand and look at how these things fit. And so the first thing that has to be important to me in my life has got to be my relationship with God. Okay? Now, why do I say that? And in a short realm of things, I'm going to tell you that in my life, my childhood was very dysfunctional. I didn't know what love was, right? Because love in my young childhood life was always conditional on things. With my mother, and who they say is always the closest example of unconditional love, my mother's love was conditional to the point that, hey, if you and your stepdad can't get along, you gotta go. Okay? Then she moved me in with a dad who basically, when I was 12 years old, left me again and said, son, I really didn't want kids in the picture, and things are just tough. So I gotta go. So everything that was about love in my life early was conditional. And so how in the world was I going to have a successful relationship? How was I going to love somebody unconditionally? I didn't even know what that meant. To me, love was conditional. As long as it was good for me and it fit, we're great. But the second it doesn't fit into my bubble anymore, it's got to go. So if I had found my wife before I had found Christ, we would have never made it. Because the first argument we had, the first time we disagreed on something, I'd say, you know what, you don't fit my profile anymore. You have to go. So I had to say, you know what, I got to put God first in my life. So I got to find somebody who's going to allow me to do that. Number two, my wife is second to me. She is the love of my life. She's my spouse. She's my number two. She'll always be my number two, and she just has to accept that. Okay? But my number three is my children. Now, this is the part where I tell the world we have messed up because we have began to put our children before our spouses. And let's face it, without your spouse, you don't have kids. Right? Our spouses come before our children. Now, I get into this all the time. I've had people say, well, you know, I have these children from my first marriage. It doesn't matter anymore. If you're deciding to get together, those children have to come after your spouse. And if you cannot commit to that, then you stay single until your kids are grown and gone. Now, the reality of all of this is that things get out of order in our life, and all of a sudden we can't figure out why we're miserable. Now, right after our children, I put our church. Now, understand I put God and church here, right? Because the assembly here, the church, is not as important as my relationship with God. So I put it down here. This assembly is not more important than my wife or my children. Now, my God is more important than that, but not the assembly, right? But now it still needs to be important to me, and my wife and my kids, I need to involve them in it and make it part of the situation, but it never needs to come before them. And then behind that is friends and family. And I've had some people try to argue this with me. Well, you know, I think, you know, friends and what I call immediate family, you know, moms, dads, all those people, they become down the list. So I call them down the line, right? I love them, but they don't come before my church. They don't come before my kids. They don't come before my spouse. And they definitely don't come before my God. Now, right past down the step from friends and family comes my job. Okay? My job fits in there. It's got to be important. It's got to fit. It's got to have a place in my life. And, of course, that last and bottom step is my hobby. And I tell everybody all the time, it's very important that you have a hobby. You know, I've talked to people and their hobby's playing video games. And that's fine. I have no problem if that's your thing. But just make sure it's not coming before your family. It's not coming before your church, your children, your spouse, or your God. Everything in your life has a place and a time and an opportunity. You just got to get that in order. And why do I lay that out for you like this? Because the number one thing plaguing our marriages today is we're putting our children first, we're putting our church first, we're putting our moms and our dads and our family and our friends first, we're putting our job first, we're putting our hobbies first. When I ask you, where did the love go? What I'm going to tell you is that we were so in love because when we started dating, we removed all of that. I would stay up till 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning and still get up and go to work. And if that happened today, I'd probably call in sick. I'd love all that. I can't go to work. You know, and then kids happen, and we got to drag them to sports, and we got to drag them here, and we got to drag them there. And all of a sudden, family time goes out the window, and all of these things are creating separation. Now, understand, I'm not telling you that none of these things happen, right? But here's what I tell people, and this is the theory that I teach, and what we're going to go over is this. Is if I spend time doing my hobby away from my wife, I have to think in my mind, I'm going to have to make up that time. I'm going to have to make up that time. My job is going to call me away. I'm going to work away. And I'll be honest with you, in my life, I'm considered what they could call a workaholic. And that is a struggle that I have battled since I was young. I just am all about, I'll bury myself in work. And I convinced myself in my brain that I was providing for my family. So how can my family be upset about my job? But that was the sick reality that I had said, you know what? Because the problem was, is it's not that I go to work. It's not that I go do those things. The problem is then when I'm off work, I want to go do my hobby. But you see, by spending all my time at work, when I'm at home, I need to spend time on the relationship with the kids and the wife. You see, you got to understand, these are the things that are important to me in order. And I've got to be willing to make up those things. I've got to be willing to figure out how all of that works together. And so I want to try to show you this in an illustration, and then I'm going to explain to you how we fix this. And so I'm going to move this right over here, and you said it'd be okay if I borrow y'all. I hope he approved that with you. If not, please be mad at him. So y'all come on up here for me. Y'all give him a hand. And just come on up here. I promise to be nice.
So,
no, come on up here. Come on up here. It's all right. It's all right. Now, y'all just turn right here, and y'all can hold hands and just be in love there for a minute. Perfect. Don't be making faces at one another. You're moving. I forgot to tell you that part of this. They just got it. They needed these boxes a couple of months ago, huh? Okay. Now, to me, when we look at this, this is what a couple looks like. They hold hands. They're in love. Everything's going well, right? So, yeah, it's so sweet. Now, do you have hobbies?
I do.
What is your favorite hobby?
Playing golf.
Playing golf. Okay, do you have a hobby? Okay. You like crafts? Sewing? Okay. I just was checking because I was making a sewing reference the last time I did this, and my wife said, never do that again. So I was hoping you'd say sewing, and I was going to look at her and smile real big, but you blew that for me. I appreciate it. Perfect. You see, so this is the thing. What's happened today is you decided to go play golf. So what we're going to do here, y'all, give me a little room here. We're going to put that right there, just like that. Now what happens is every time that we decide to take things out of order, we build up a wall, right? The first time I'd ever heard this, I went to a pastor's conference. And what's more religious than a pastor's conference, right? First thing he said, on the way home, he said, you need to pick up flowers for your wife. He said, because even though this was a great conference, a great thing to do to grow your church, it was still something that separated you from your wife today. And I was like, wow. And so I began to think about what he said. And it doesn't matter. And so what about taking kids to sports? Do y'all have to do that sometimes? Dance. Okay. So is it an argument about who takes them? No. Okay. You do. But it still kind of takes time away. So, you know, and you know, again, nothing wrong with dance. But, you know, it's going to build up here. So, you see, what's beginning to happen is this wall is slowly getting bigger in our lives. And then all of a sudden things come up. And you know what? It's not golf today. It's raining today. But you just want to watch TV, right? You just want to just relax. And so you go, you know what, honey, just be quiet. I don't want to talk to you today. I just want to watch some TV. And now all of a sudden, you're getting a little bigger, right? You think the romance is probably getting a little bit involved. It's getting a little tougher, a little bit. You know, and that's what begins to happen. It's just, you know, it's not bad. We still see each other. We're still holding hands. Everything's great. But it's just a little bit of contention, right? And so, you think, oh, it's going to, but she decides today she's going to, she wants to do crafts, and, you know, so today it's her fault.
Perfect.
Yeah. So we're going to do that. Now, how are things going now? It's a little weird, isn't it? A little weird, a little awkward. You know, the problem is the more awkward it gets, the faster this goes, right? Because now all of a sudden resentment settles in. Because what he's looking at now is he's saying, you know what, I can't believe we had time to spend together. And she did crafts. And she's still all the way back down here where he went and played golf. You know? And so they're a little upset. So how are we doing there? Huh? Yeah. Romance is getting really weird now, isn't it? Now, don't worry, though. There's still more. It's just like a bad infomercial. It just never stops. Perfect. Now, how are we doing? Not so good. Why not? You can't see. Man. But you can still hold hands, right?
Barely.
Don't worry. We're going to fix that. You see, because what I tell people is all the time, here we go. You can quit holding hands now. Perfect. How are we doing? Don't let it fall on you. It's not builder approved, so the city would have definite problems with my wall. The thing is that what I tell people is we build this wall up, and one of the first things to go is intimacy. When people come to me and they say, you know, Pastor, we're having marital problems. I say, well, how is the intimacy part of your relationship? And most time the comment is, it hasn't been. Intimacy is the first thing to go. As you began to build that wall up, it got harder and harder until now it's gone, right? The other thing that's really bad right now is communication. How hard is it to talk to somebody you can't see? Not there, is it? So what's happening now is all of a sudden, have you ever heard of a couple that they only scream at each other? That's all they ever do? Their only form of communication is You know? They just holler and scream all the time. It's because they've allowed so many things to build up in their relationship that there's no more intimacy and there's no more communication. And I'm going to do one more. Definitely don't let it crumble on your head. Let's go ahead. She's bracing. Are you scared yet? You pushing it over towards him? I see. I'm not sure what days counseling are, but we might need some. But the thing is that now all of a sudden this wall starts to look unsurmountable, doesn't it? I mean, what am I going to do, right? And this is exactly the point where there's a problem. There's no intimacy. There's no communication. There's just complete separation. Maybe they live in the same house. This is the stage where I hear people say, we just stay together for the kids. This is what their relationship looks like, but they're together for the kids. This is also the point where it becomes very easy for a woman to come up to you and begin to convince you that you deserve better. You deserve a woman that will talk to you and understand you. This is the time when a man would come to you and began to try to emotionally attach himself to the woman and say, you know, you deserve somebody that understands your feelings and will listen to you. But the problem is that you don't need a new man or a woman. You need to address the wall in the situation. So what we're going to look at, and y'all are dismissed. Thank y'all so much. Y'all give them a hand. It won't fall yet. I got it. It's good. I'll take this one down and it'll become somewhat stable. The thing is that this wall is what we need to address. This is the problem right here. It's not that you need a new man or a new woman. That's the same person that you courted. That's the same person that you stayed up all night with on the phone. That's the same person that you opened doors for. That's the same person. The same thing that made you fall in love with them still exists. The problem is now all of this exists. So how do we deal with that? How do we work on that? And this is where I came to in my life, because I was a bivocational pastor all of my ministry career when I was pastoring. Okay? So I was a bivocational pastor, and in my first job, I worked 90 to 100 hours a week plus pastored a church. My wife will tell you, I would get home, and I had 4 hours till I had to be back at work. I would just sleep on the floor. She'd keep the kids quiet so they wouldn't wake me up. And all of a sudden, I looked up 10 years into our relationship, and I knew that this wall had built. Now, at that time in my life, I didn't have this visual and this understanding of what had happened, but I could know what happened. So my thing since then has been, how do I illustrate this to people? That the problem is not the person that you got married to. The problem is the wall that you've created since you got married. So how do we unpack that? How do we get rid of that? And so in my life, because I was a workaholic, and so I thought, well, you know, I just need to provide a good living for my family, and I need to give them good gifts. But in my life, it's the harder I worked, the more gifts I gave, the more things that I put out in front of there, it didn't seem to be making a difference. It still didn't make a difference. No matter what I bought, no matter what I did, it still believed I had a wife that had 2 great kids, and I had 0 relationship with them. How do I fix it? Buy more stuff. Give them more gifts. Shower them with things. So to do that, I had to get a better job. I had to work harder. I had to be gone more. And then I couldn't understand. I was like, this is the man she married. That she knows me. She understands. When people would tell me, you work too much, I go, no, my wife understands me. And it doesn't matter if she understands me. The thing is that even if she understands, I'm still building a wall. So all of a sudden I go, you know, God, what am I going to do? So at the very moment, at the very time that I began to see this wall and to see what this looked like, I got handed a book one time from a perfect stranger. And it was a book written by a guy that has my last name. His name is Gary Chapman. And it's a book called Love Languages. If you've never read it, you need to write that down and you need to read it, because I'm telling you right now, that's the book that taught me how to go from this back to nothing. It's the book that taught me what I was doing wrong. It's a book about love languages. And what that is that the love languages that we speak, that we receive. You see, all this time I had been buying my wife more stuff, nicer cars, newer cars, all these things. But it wasn't making a difference in our relationship. Because I found out that gifts don't speak to my wife. So what I want to look at is how do we remove blocks from our wall? Now, the hardest thing is this, that we are wired to build walls. You're going to do this all by yourself. You don't need any help. I don't need any help with me. My hobby is off-roading. I need zero help or excuses to go get in my Jeep and leave, right? I do that very well all on my own. I'm wired to work myself to death. I have no problem working a job, working 100 hours a week. It doesn't bother me one bit. The problem is I didn't see the damage it was doing to everyone else. I'm wired to build this wall, like every one of you are. We're a little bit selfish. We're going to put our hobbies first, our families first. You know, one of the biggest things I have to counsel to a new couple in the first 2 years of their marriage is my wife continues to go to her mother, or my husband continues to go to his dad with all of his problems instead of discussing them with me. You see, that's adding bricks to the wall, creating a division, right? Because we got things out of order. Now, in his book, The Love Languages, I want you to understand that this is not a scorekeeper, and this is not a scorecard. It's not, well, he did this or he did that. You know what? My wife might be stacking all the bricks up on the wall today, and it might be up to me to remove them. You know, a long time ago, people used to tell me, you know, marriage is 50-50. Have you ever heard that? It's not true, is it? Because as long as I'm doing 50-50, I'm keeping score, right? Well, you do this, and I'm going to do this. You do that, and I'm going to do this. That's what we hear in the world all the time, right? You know what? Honey, you keep the house clean, and I'll do the yard work. I got a much better arrangement. Baby, you just do it all. I love you. You know? Much rather play golf than mow, right? I'm the guy who says, you know what? I'd much rather pick up a shift and hire somebody to mow that yard. The thing is that this is going to be work for you. And it's not 50-50. Marriage is 100% commitment. So you have to look at it, it's 100%, 100%. Now, the greatest thing for me, and I tell everybody, I found the perfect bride for me. Because there's days she's giving 100% and I'm doing nothing. She's keeping the family alive. She's keeping the relationship alive. She's doing everything today. And then next week, it might be her that's in a slump. And I got to pick up and do 100%. The thing is that our marriage needs to add up to 100%. And some days she's going to have to do all of it. Some days I'm going to have to do all of it. Some days I'm going to do 75 to her 25. And sometimes we're going to do 50-50. Here's what I tell people all the time in marriage counseling when we talk about it. Because one of the first questions I ask them is, who's taking out the trash? Because it's an idea of this. Stereotypically, right? Women have taken care of the inside of the house, and the men have done the outside of the house. That's the stereotypical way, okay? But the process is if that works for you, that's great. And that's pretty well the arrangement my wife and I had, right? You keep the yard done, and I just said, well, don't expect too many flowers. That takes too much time. If it's there, I'll mow it. But other than that, it's on its own. But that's the arrangement we had, and we were both happy with that. But that doesn't mean that when I come in and she's worked all day and I do the dishes, that the first words out of my mouth when she come in is, I did your dishes. Okay? I didn't do your dishes. Just like there's been times when I work a lot that she would make sure the yard work was done. And she'd always come in and she said, now I know why you hate flowers. I said, you're getting it. But the thing was is that it's about coming to an agreement of what works for you in a relationship, how y'all want to divide up things. And then it's about making sure that you help out when the other person falls down. Since my wife started nursing, I try to take a bigger part in chores around the house, you know, inside. And when she comes home, I don't throw up in her face, well, I've washed 4 loads of clothes and done the whole sink of dirty dishes. If she can't see that I did that, then there's probably already a communication problem, right? Because the first thing I did when I threw that in her face when she got home is what? Anything that good could have come out of that just went back up here. So let's talk about those 5 love languages. I'll give them to you first, and then we'll break them each down. Words of affirmation. Quality time. The receiving of gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. Now, that's the five love languages that he has broke down. Now, in this book, and there's also a way you can go online and you can do an online assessment that'll tell you your love language. Most of the time, tentatively, whatever you like to receive is what you try to speak. The problem with that is that sometimes your spouse speaks an entirely different love language than you do. So you will be working yourself to death and making no grounds. None. You'll be like, I don't know, she doesn't get it. I'm doing all of this for her, but it's not meaning anything. Or I'm doing all of this for him, and it means nothing. And the problem with that is it's because you're speaking the wrong language. You're investing energy where it's never going to work. I could have bought my wife everything that I thought she wanted, and it wouldn't have made our relationship any better. Now, this first one that we're going to talk about is words of affirmation. Words of affirmation. Actions don't always speak louder than words. If this is your love language, unsolicited compliments mean the world to you. Hearing the words, I love you, are important. Hearing the reason behind that love sends your spirit skyward. Insults can leave you shattered and are not easily forgotten. Okay? And I'll be honest with you, this is the hardest one for me to speak because I'm a get-it-done kind of person. I'll be honest, my opinion in my entire life has been if you need praise to do what's right, then you have a problem. Just being honest, right? But is that healthy for making relationships? No, because some people need those words of affirmation. Some people really need that. You know, what's really cool about this is if that's their love language, telling them I love you and explaining to them why you love them is better than buying them a diamond ring. See, that ought to have made you guys say amen. You're thinking, man, you just got out of that one. You know, cheap, right? Write some kind of corny Valentine's poetry. You know, whatever, right? Now, what I want to encourage you to do, if you find out that that's your spouse's thing, don't just become so in a riddle with it that it means nothing. When we talk about these love languages, you got to dig deep and figure out the words that really mean something. Don't just throw that out there. Don't start looking like a Hallmark card, I guess would be the best way I would put that to you. Now, the other thing, so we get some words of affirmation in there, and we began to break this thing down. And all of a sudden, if you notice, if they were still standing up here, all of a sudden now they're starting to be able to see each other again. See what I'm saying? This is getting better, right? Because we've invested, we've worked, we've done this. Now, the next one is quality time. In the vernacular of quality time, nothing says I love you like full undivided attention. Being there for this type of person is critical, but really being there with the TV off, the fork and knife down, the chores and tasks on standby, phone turned off, makes your significant other feel truly special and loved. Distractions, postponed dates, or failure to listen can be especially hurtful. When we talk about quality time, now as I can tell you in my relationship, quality time is not very much, right? You've heard how I try to keep myself busy. And so in the last 3 or 4 years, this has been a big point of mine, is to say, you know what? Yes, I'm busy. But I'm going to find time when, by the time she gets off work, I'm going to make sure the shop is locked down and I'm inside the house. I'm going to make sure that we create this quality time. Because I realized that I had, over the years, built this massive wall. Because even when I was at home, my wife would come home. She gets home at 8 o'clock at night. So it's not like it's already not late, right? And I'd still be out in the shop working until 10 or 11 o'clock. Well, what does that tell her? Whatever thing you're working on is more important than her. And it's adding bricks to the wall. Not that my wife doesn't love to go off-roading with me. Not that she doesn't love to do those things with me. But sometimes she wants to know she's more important than those things. I'm not telling you to never go and do those things. I'm telling you to make sure you understand when you do those things, you also have to invest the same amount of energy you do in those things in nurturing your relationship. Now, the next one that we look at here is receiving of gifts. Don't mistake the love language for materialism. The receiver of gift thrives on love, thoughtfulness, and the effort behind the gift. If you speak this language, the perfect gift or gesture shows that you are known, you are cared for, and you were prized above whatever was sacrificed to bring the gift to you. A missed birthday, anniversary, or a hasty, thoughtless gift would be disastrous. So would the absence of everyday gestures. Now, first thing we talk about when we think about gifts, right? Who doesn't love a car, right? There's nobody in here that gets a new car and goes, oh, you know, I got a new car. Everybody's excited about that. But that's not what we're talking about. I always use this example. But I don't know, it's been 8 or 9 years ago. My wife started doing these James Avery bracelets with these charms, right? But you can't just go buy a charm. You got to think about it. And James Avery knows this because they have a charm for everything. Okay? And so I remember one time I had went to the James Avery store and I was looking through this pile of charms, trying to figure out, okay, what means something that I haven't got already, you know, that I don't know. And so I look down and there's a charm and it's 50% off. You know, I don't know about her language at this moment, but I know that one spoke my language. The problem was, as I thought about it, I was like, it's a steamboat. It's a steamboat. So I sat there for the longest time not thinking about what else I should buy her, but what kind of story can I come up with that makes this steamboat work? Needless to say, she doesn't have a steamboat charm. I just went ahead and decided to pull the plug on that one. But that's what we're talking about when we talk about gifts. We're talking about finding something that truly means something to them. It's not about what it cost. It's about the thought that went into it. And somebody that has this gift, they want to know that you think about it. And see, the great thing about that is now all of a sudden we're beginning to invest our time and our energy and we're not just doing thoughtless things. And all of a sudden, look, this wall's getting a lot more manageable. We're beginning to break this thing down. All of a sudden, we're real close. We're getting way, 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 way closer to the intimate relationship that we started with. Because we're down to this point, and holding hands is pretty comfortable. We're making some eye contact. Intimacy is starting to return. Things are starting to happen. We're in communication. Man, things are going well. This next one here, acts of service. Can vacuuming the floors really be an expression of love? Yeah. Buying a vacuum cleaner for her is not so much, but I'll leave that one right there. Absolutely. Anything you do to ease the burden of responsibilities weighing on acts of service, a person speaks volumes. The words he or she most want to hear is, let me do that for you. Laziness, broken commitments, and making more work for them tells the speaker of this language their feelings don't matter. This is actually, for me, and I always thought that my love language was buying me stuff, but it's not. This is the one that means the most to me. When my wife speaks it, even with my kids, when I come home from being gone to work, I used to be gone sometimes 18, 20 days at a time and then home for two. Worst thing to have to do on your 2 days at home, I got to get the yard mowed. I got to get this done. I got to get this done. I got to get this done. Oh, by the way, I got to find time to love on you, to tell you I love you. And so to be able to come home and the yard is mowed, and the chores, that the cows are taken care of, the fence is fixed, those things all meant the world to me. Because I was like, you know what, they love me so much that they wanted to free my schedule up so we could spend time together. So this is what we're talking about when we talk about acts of service. If there's something that your wife just hates to do, as far as, let's say y'all have made that arrangement and she says, hey, I'm keeping the house clean, you keep the yard done. Maybe there's that annual cleaning where you really got to get down and scrub the floors. That's one of the best ones you can do. I remember here not too long ago, one of my wife's biggest pet peeves, we have a hardwood floor and it stays scratched up. And so I thought, you know, one of the things that I can do for her is I can go buy wax and we can wax the floor. And it looked good for about a year and now it's starting to suffer again, right? But I don't care if the floor is shiny. I don't even care if we have a floor. I'll be honest. It doesn't matter to me. She's like, I think the furniture should be like this. I'm like, I think the furniture could be out in the yard. I don't care. But because it's important to her, it becomes important to me. Some of the things that she does, as far as cleaning and scrubbing and doing, I'm like, why? It's just going to get dirty again. Just like making the bed. That is the biggest waste of time in the entire world. Okay? If you want to tuck it a little bit, fine. But to fully take everything off the bed, straighten everything, and put it all back on, so tonight I can take it all back off to get in the bed. But I figured out that that's important to my wife. Okay? So I let her make it every chance she gets. Just kidding. You know, but we just continue to do things, and we continue to work things out, and we continue to move around, and we just continue all of that. And then I'm like, you know, man, life's got a lot better. Because now instead of staying together for the kids, we're staying together for us. Now instead of being on some kind of social media app looking for a woman that would love me more, I'm looking right across the way at a woman that loves me with everything she has. You see, it's perspective, right? I was willing to invest the work to make this relationship exactly what most people are trying to go out in the world and look for. I've already got it. How do I know that? Because I remember when we were dating. I remember the love we had, the looks we shared, the hands we held. I remember all of those times and those moments and those things. So the question is not, how do I go find somebody else to give that to me? The question is, how much can I work to fix this and make this what it used to be? And I've learned it's about unpacking all of the things that we've got in the way with. And this last one, physical touch. And I've learned it before you start looking at this, every man in the room says, that's my gift. So, it is a family-friendly show, so we won't go too far with that. But the reality is, you know, most men are like, that's the thing. But what I've learned is, less than 20% of the men, that's actually the thing. That's because when we talk about physical touch here, we're not actually talking about that process of intimacy, because all of that is fixed through this. But what we're actually talking about is what makes you believe that your wife loves you. What makes you believe your spouse is in love with you? Physical touch. This language isn't all about the bedroom. A person whose primary language is physical touch is not surprisingly very touchy. Hugs, pats on the back, holding hands, thoughtful touches on the arm, shoulder, or face. They can all be ways to show excitement, concern, care, and love. Physical presence and acceptability are crucial, while neglect or abuse can be unforgivable and destructive. Now, I have no idea why all men think that's the deal. Because I can say this, because me and my wife, we laugh about this, because we hate holding hands. It's just awkward, right? You know, I don't know what it is. I don't care about walking through the mall holding your hand. I'll walk beside you, that's cool. That way I can push you into the mannequin when we walk by. So it didn't take me long to figure out that's neither of our love language. And I'm okay with that because I'm not a touchy-feely kind of person. It took me 4 years of going to church where I really wanted people to hug me. And I was 10 years in the ministry, and I had a woman come out of preaching one day. And, you know, you do the Baptist thing. You stand at the back, shaking hands, patting everybody, you know, one-arm hug. And all of a sudden, this woman, she tricked me. I went for the one-arm hug. She spun and said, right on the lips. And what was worse than that, my wife wasn't even offended. She was laughing. That was not my love language. I was grossed out. And you see, sometimes we're spending all this time thinking that every man's spiritual language is physical touch. And it's not. So even sometimes women misinterpret this and think that all they got to do to make their husband feel more loved is give more physical touch. But physical touch with a broken relationship does not work because it's not intimacy anymore. It's duty. I need you to begin to understand there are things that are going to happen in your life in a time, in a season, in a moment. They're going to build the wall up. There's nothing you can do about that. But what you can do is stop allowing it to build up to the point that it caters your relationship. Break it down to where it's manageable. Because I tell everybody, anybody that tells me that there's not at least a stumbling block in their relationship is lying to me. It is. If I tried to tell you me and my wife never argue, would you believe me? If you did, I got oceanfront property in Arizona. Isn't that the way the song goes? The thing is that we're all going to have those stumbling blocks. There's going to be times in my life where I've worked and I've been gone and I know I need to stay home, but my buddies call and they want to go out and take the Jeeps out and tear up perfectly good vehicles. And I'm all about that. And I look at her and say, baby, do you want to go? She's like, ooh, it's hot or it's cold. I said, all right, I'll see you tomorrow. But I know that when I come home, I'm going to have to invest in our relationship. Because if I continue this path, this wall of separation is going to build up, and one day she's going to be looking at another man the way she looks at me. And I have nobody to blame but me. And if the wall stays built up long enough, I hate to say it, the relationship can quite possibly, without divine intervention, become unrepairable. Now, I believe with God all things are possible. The problem is that God left man to free will, which means you have a choice to accept his path. There's a scripture out there that's so commonly misquoted that says, you know, God will not put more on you than you can handle. But the last part of that they leave off, right? Without giving me a way out. And you know what I've learned? So many times we have more on us than we can handle. You know why? Because the way out, you didn't like it. So you kept going the way you wanted to go. And in relationships, that's sometimes what happens. God didn't put on you a relationship that you couldn't handle. But God gave you a path for reconciliation in that relationship, and now you have to make a decision. Are you willing to put in the work to repair it? Are you willing to invest in a process? I can tell you by the number of people who've sat through my training on this and have come back to me and said, Pastor, I tried it and it works. I'm promising you, if you will invest as much time in tearing the wall down as you do in building the wall, you can have the marriage you had the day you met. But it's not going to happen by itself. Job's going to call. Kids are going to have sports. The greens are going to be real nice. You have to do those things. I even tell people sometimes, part of my wife speaking my love language is, she goes, honey, please go out in the Jeeps and tell your friends to keep you for a few days. I'm not sure how to interpret that, but I'll take it any way I can get it. But what I want to ask you today, two things. Number one, in your marriage, in your relationship, what are you investing? What are you investing? Are you just taking? Are you just stacking? Are you working? I'd love to tell you, you know, they always say love's a feeling. I always tell everybody, you know, really, truly, love's another job. It's true, you know. We put safety statements out like Target Zero, and we print them on banners, and we do it. And when we beat it into their head enough, it works. So my goal today is to try to beat this into your head enough to understand that love is more than a feeling. It's something that you have to get up every morning and culture and grow. It's going to take effort. But the second thing I wanted to share with you today is if you're not investing in your relationship with God, the world is going to help you stack bricks up on the wall faster than you can remove them. I use this term in marriage counseling too when I also ask them who takes out the trash. I go, have you ever determined what is the common denominator in your relationship? What is the common denominator in your relationship? And they're like, what? I said, really, you know, what thing brings you together? And I've had people tell me it's, you know, we both love sports. We both do this. We both do that. I think she's attractive. I think he's attractive. And you know what the problem is with all of those common denominators? In times, they change. You know, because I can tell you through our time in marriage, my hobbies changed pretty quick. And my wife, she's been very patient with me because I'm all in always, right? It's been everything from roping to dirt bikes to fishing to skiing to now Jeeps. But the thing was is that that's not our common denominator. Because if it was, where would we be when somebody's feelings changed? Where would it be if our common denominators are good looks? Where would it go? They don't last forever. I mean, look at the extent of plastic surgery done on people trying to stay young. The thing is that there's only one common denominator that never changes, that never goes away. And you can always trust him. And that's when a couple looks at me and tells me, Pastor, our common denominator is our love for Jesus Christ. So you see, today, before you can fix your marriage, you got to fix your relationship with God. Before any of this stuff matters, before any of this works, before you can understand unconditional love that makes me want to invest the work instead of look for a new one, you got to understand how much God loved you. Because my statement has always been this. What if God one day decided that he had lost interest in you and walked away? It would be the saddest day of your life. That is exactly the same thing that happens if you don't love your spouse like God loves you. And one day you decide just to walk away. I don't know about you, but I serve a God that'll never walk away. I serve a God that even in the midst of my worst times has been my beacon of light. And today I want to pray over you in closing. I want to pray that your love and your relationship with God would be first. And I want to pray that second, God would begin to repair relationships across this room. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. God, we love you, we honor you, we praise you. We thank you for this day, this time, this opportunity to come into your presence. God, I just pray over those in the room today. God, I just pray that your spirit would begin to lead in them, God, that any relationship they're in, that God, that you would be that common denominator. God, that you would be the thing that holds them together. God, that you would be the one unchanging presence in their relationships that would never let them grow apart. God, I pray today that if there's a marriage out there that today that the wall already feels too tall to remove, God, that right now you soften the hearts of that couple. Right now you begin to work in them and tell them that this relationship is worth saving. God, I pray that you would help us to understand one another's love languages. God, that spouses would quit working at no prevail, but God speaking to their spouse in a language that they know, love, and understand. God, I pray that you would forever change relationships today. God, I pray that you're here with people today who are not in a relationship, God, that you would begin to build these building blocks for them, God, that you would impart this into their mind, God, that they could understand it, that they could comprehend it, and that they could begin to put these principles in place before they ever enter into a marriage. God, we love you for everything that you're doing in our life. And God, we just want you to do great things in us and through us.